asked me to summarize for you the progress we have made in understanding neutrino properties. And I have subtitled this talk about with the name of the Golden Neutrino Decade, because it's exactly 10 years now. It was in June 1998 that Super-K announced the evidence of neutrino oscillations in atmospheric neutrino data. It has been an amazing time in which several experiments, incredible results have come together to give us a coherent, maybe not very satisfactory and not complete, but a coherent picture of the flavor structure of the leptons of the standard model, which I will try to review for you. And then in the time that I have left, if it's any, I may tell you what else you can learn, what other things we have been testing with this data beyond neutrino masses and mixings. All right, so let me start with my artistic picture of the sources of neutrinos that we are exposed in our everyday life. The oldest neutrinos we have around are those that are relics of the Big Bang, like CMB photons. We also have neutrinos. They are very low in, this will be kinetic energy. So we have not detected directly. I don't think there's much hope for that, or people is thinking. But we think we are starting with the precision data of the cosmology we heard yesterday. We are starting to test some properties of these neutrinos through their imprint on this cosmological data. And then, of course, neutrinos are produced in astrophysical objects. The oldest we have detected are the one coming from supernova 1987, are the only extragalactic neutrinos we have detected. And somehow they open this era of neutrino astronomy, which is a totally new, totally different subject I will not discuss. And there are incredible experiments being built also to detect that. And then the most luminous source of neutrinos we have around is the sun, which produces electron neutrinos, and which we are detecting in the energy range between 100 keV to 10 MeV or so. And then we have the neutrinos that are produced by the interactions of cosmic rays on the atmosphere. These are called atmospheric neutrinos. All days, they were called also cosmic neutrinos. They are neutrinos, electron, and muon flavor, and antineutrinos. And we have detected in energies between hundreds of MeV to hundreds of GeV. So that's a long energy range. And then the Earth produced neutrinos, anti-electron neutrinos, indeed, because of the radioactive materials. And we call them geoneutrinos. We use them to learn about the Earth composition. And along my talk, they are mostly a very annoying background to some of the signals. And then we have the ones that are produced by human activity. Some of them are byproducts of our need of energy in the form of electron antineutrinos produced at reactors. And then some of them are really produced for science, as the main goal, in neutrino beams in accelerators, presently both at CERN and Fermilab and Japan. And then as a curiosity, if you want, we ourselves are a source of neutrinos. We emit about 300 million neutrinos a day, and so far nobody has found any utility of those, but you can keep thinking. This is because we have potassium in our body. All right, so for particle physicists, neutrinos are an interesting animals in the standard model. They are particularly curious because they are the only neutral fermions on the standard model, which means we don't, and they don't have color, so there is no vector current associated to them, so there is no need of right-handed neutrinos for the interactions, which are purely chiral because they're only weak. So because of that, the model defined itself with these particle contents has this accidental global symmetry, which is variable number and the three flavors of the leptons, which implies that neutrinos are strictly massless. They are strictly massless perturbatively because of this symmetry. They are also strictly massless for non-perturbative effects because B minus L is not anomalous. And that was okay when we built the model because everything we had till then were just limits on the kinematic effects of the masses. Very good. So in a nutshell, this is where the progress has come and has broken this picture. We have learned that atmospheric muon neutrinos disappear. And this is, I mean, I put 20 sigma as I put anything. This is an incredible, well-determined effect. And we think that it's most likely that they appear in the form of tau neutrinos. Then we have seen that muon neutrinos that are produced in accelerators are also disappearing over distances of the order of hundreds of kilometers. And they do it in an energy-dependent way, which is a very important piece of information with a very good significance. solar electron neutrinos disappear, and we see them appearing in the form of other flavors that have. So that's also very important evidence. And then reactor electron antineutrinos also disappear over kilometer distances in an energy dependence way. And then we, LSND, found this evidence, which has for conversion of muon to electron flavor, but has not been confirmed by other experiments, and we will hear more about it later. So what I tried to show you is that all this implies that neutrinos have to be massive, and the name of the game is how to put all this together coherently, consistently, taking into account that we have many other sources of information about neutrinos, which basically constrain how well we can actually explain all this together. All right, so the minimum I need to do to the model to account for this data is to add a neutrino mass term. Because neutrinos are neutral, I can do this two ways. I can add a standard Dirac mass term, like for the other fermions. In this case, I have to add a right-handed neutrino, and I must impose total lepton number conservation. Or I may not impose total lepton number conservation, and I build the Majorana mass term only with the left-handed fields, which of course breaks SU2 symmetry, so you have to somehow assume that this is maybe like a low energy effect of some high energy operator, like in the case of the CISON. All right. So from the point of view of the interactions of the neutrinos, the important thing is that now the charge current of the fermions has a mixing matrix when it's written in the terms of mass eigenstates, the same as for the case of the quarks. It's slightly different because in general this leptonic mixing matrix doesn't even have to be a square because I can add as many singlets as I want. It doesn't have to be unitary either when I project it over the three light states. But and it contains a number of mixing angles and phases which depend on the actual number of neutrino states and whether they are Dirac or Majorana particles. For most of my talk, I will be reducing to 3 times 3 or 2 times 2. All right, so the way we have learned about neutrino masses is because all this data that I have mentioned briefly can be interpreted in terms of flavor oscillations, which come out as soon as you include these neutrino masses and the effect of the mixing in the weak current, because they induce misalignment between the interaction states, which are the ones we produce and we detect, and the ones that propagate in vacuum, they are just the mass eigenstates. So because of this misalignment, you can have a probability of detecting a neutrino with a flavor which is different than the one that was produced, and this is the probability that comes out. And it clearly has to have an amplitude that depends on the misalignment, which is the mixings, and also it's an oscillating phase that depends on the phase difference between the different propagation eigenstates, in this case the masses. This is a very nice, this is a powerful tool, and it has some limitations. The limitations is that we only are sensitive to mass differences, not of the absolute scale. And we don't know out of here whether neutrinos are Dirac or Majorana particles. The Majorana phases simply cancel out in this particular combination. For a good fraction of the talk, you can explain most of the data or understand it at least qualitatively in terms of effective two neutrino oscillations, which means that I mostly, for most, I can project on one mixing and one delta M square. So the amplitude is dominated by the mixing, is controlled by the mixing, and the wavelength by the mass difference. All right, so all this is for propagation in vacuum. To understand the data, you have to know that this gets affected when neutrino travels through dense matter. And that is so because neutrinos can undergo coherent forward scattering with the particles in the medium. And because the medium has electrons, but doesn't have muons or taus, that coherent scattering is flavor dependent. So it affects the evolution of flavors in the propagation. And that in particular implies that the mixing angle can be enhanced or suppressed depending on the relative sign of the potential and the kinetic term. And this is indeed this is what is called the MSW effect, and this is what is really the main effect in solar neutrinos. So solar neutrinos do not oscillate as the standard oscillation. This is the main effect that we observe in solar neutrinos, as I will try to show you. All right, so to search for oscillations, experimentally, you have two probes. You have a source with a given flavor, which you either whose flux you either measure or predict, and you later measure at a certain distance near the source and then farther from the source, and you try to see if there's some difference. And or you have a source of a given flavor and you detect a different flavor. That's an appearance experiment. Most of the events, most of the results we have now, okay, here, most of the results are in the form of this appearance, though we have indirect evidence of the appearance for solar neutrinos. All right, so atmospheric neutrinos. These are electron and mu neutrinos, as I say, that are produced by the interaction of cosmic rays in the atmosphere. And we have detected the most precisely from Super K in ranges between hundreds of MeV and hundreds of GeV. Super K has the capability of classifying these events depending on topologies, knowing about the flavor and knowing about the direction of the lepton that is producing the neutrino interactions. And these are the different data samples in the first two phases of Super K. So these are the electron samples, and these are the muon samples. And as you move from here, no, I see like this and this, it, energy increases. And this is the angle of the produced lepton, which measured, like if it's coming from here, it's coming from below, and meaning that the neutrinos mostly produced at the other side of the Earth, 10,000 kilometers, or if it's in this direction, it comes from the top, around 20 kilometers over my head. And what you see from here, in brief, is that the electron neutrinos perfectly agree with the standard model up to normalization, which is just the global factor, while the muon neutrinos clearly show a deficit. The deficit is clearly growing with the distance, and it disappears at higher in the higher energy samples. So that is as good as it gets to see a signal of oscillations. And because the electrons don't play much of a role, the main channel is mu to tau, and this is the best determination at the moment of the mass and the mixing. It's the order 10 to minus 3 electron volt, and the mixing angle is very close to maximum. So progress has been done in this front by testing this with neutrinos from accelerators. We have three beams, as I say, three beams. And the first one was the one from Japan. It was an experiment that shoot the neutrinos from Keck to Super K. And already at 2004 had a clear evidence for a deficit which was energy dependent and clearly coincide when analyzed in terms of oscillations with the expected masses and mixings from atmospheric neutrinos, though it didn't add much to the determination of the parameters. Then we have the MINOS experiment shooting from Fermilab to Sudan, and it has a much more precision. It has been taking data for the last 2 years. This is the latest data, and it has already a very important impact in the determination of the masses, though not much on the mixing. All right, let me move now to solar neutrinos. These are electron neutrinos which are produced in the nuclear reactions that make the sun burn. And we label them according to the reactions, and we have detected them in all these experiments in energy ranges between, as I say, hundreds of keV to 10 MeV or so. Prior to the golden decade, we had results from radiochemical experiments. These are experiments in which you have a big tank of some compound that is able to, by inverse beta decay, absorb an electron neutrino from the sun and produce and change the type of nuclei. So what you do is every now and every certain time, weeks, you empty this tank and you search for the argon in the chlorine or the germanium in the gallium tank. And they are only observed, the only sensitive to electron neutrinos because of this inverse beta decay. And they both observe a deficit, though different depending on the threshold of the reaction. Most of the advance in this field in the last decade came from real time experiments. The precursor was Kamiokande and then Super K, which are important because they detect the neutrino interaction in an event by event basis. So they not only tell you I have an event, they also tell you the characteristic energy associated to the event, and they can tell you the directionality of the event and the time, okay? So because all this gave an enormous impact, and a big impact came the beginning of the 2000s from an experiment in Canada, which was able to detect these real-time interactions through three different reactions, which are sensitive to the same part of the flux, but to different flavors. So if there were only electroneutrinos coming from the sun, these numbers should all account to be the same. They are different, which clearly gave us a total model-independent evidence for flavor conversion of the solar neutrinos. All right. So as I said, this real-time the experiments gave us a lot of information. They gave us information on the directionality. So it was as soon as that what we were calling solar neutrinos indeed were coming from the sun. The energy dependence at the high energy part of the spectrum, which is what they can detect. The day-night variation and the seasonal variation. There was something I wanted to say, which I forgot. Just the latest in this game is Borexino, who has presented data this year. This is a very difficult experiment because it's the first one that attempts at a real-time detection of the low-energy part of the spectrum. Okay, so it's incredibly difficult to actually clean this from the all type of backgrounds, and this very success that they actually have given a measure that is actually totally compatible with the picture we had. All right, so this is where we are. So this is where we were before all this precision data, and this we were in a kind of a mess situation because we have different regimes that could explain this data. And because of this very powerful results from real-time experiments, we could actually single out a unique range of masses and mixings. And we actually can see that the mass is totally different than the one we observed before for the atmospheric. The mixing is large, but clearly not maximal. And then more progress in that front came from, again, testing this signal with man-made neutrinos. Somebody noticed that there is a place in Japan that is strategically located at around 180 kilometers in average from a lot of reactors. And that's exactly the distance that you see for neutrinos with these parameters to oscillate with energies of the order of MeV, which is what you produce in a reactor. So that led to the experiment Kamlan. And this was in 2002, they produced the first result as a real deficit. And then they could very much, in the last 4 years, give very detailed analysis of their energy dependence, which clearly saw a distortion. And this distortion allowed not only to test the oscillation, but actually to give a much better precision of the mass that we had. So there is one thing else that I want to point out here. You have here all these results. These are from reactor experiments at short and intermediate distances, which saw no deficit. And that clearly means that electron neutrinos cannot mix very much with anything that has delta M squares, which are higher, because that will show up as a deficit there. So that's important when you try to put all this together. Anyway, so this is where we are when we combine the solar and reactor, assuming CPT. And now, if you try to put all this together, you need three neutrinos at least. And that means that you not only have two mixings, you have a third mixing, you have the possibility of CP violation. You can order your states into forms. And what you have learned from this that I just showed you is that there is a clear hierarchy between the two mass splittings. And the fact, and you also have learned, you don't know that, but you have learned that this mixing angle, which is the one that gives the projection of the electron flavor over the large mix, delta M squared, has to be small, because otherwise I would have observed signals at reactors at short distances, and I haven't. All right, so because, so, but it's still, I mean, so the in order to put all this together, you have to account for generic three neutrino mixing effects, which are associated with this additional mixing angle, with the difference between this and this, with CP violation effects associated to the data. These are all very small effects, which are barely visible in the present data. There is an enormous amount of effort from the phenomenological point of view, which I'm going to spare you of trying to improve as much as possible on the observations and on the observables to try to extract as much as possible of this information. So when you see this type of analysis, all these effects are included. And they lead to this somehow small variations with respect to the simple two neutrino picture that I was showing you before. And the only thing that I want to point out here is that this difference between this curve and this is how good these man-made neutrinos from reactors and from accelerators have improved the determination of the masses. We have a good, okay, but we don't have such a good, so, but the mixing angle is still mostly determined from atmospheric and solar neutrinos. All right, so this is where we are. This is our best determination of the leptonic mixing matrix. We know very well. We have a good precision on the mass differences. The mixing angles are okay. Can we improve? We have open questions about them still. We don't know nothing about the CP phase, and we have a mixing angle, but we don't know whether it is zero, small, or very small. And all right, and this just when I say that it is not particularly how do I say this? Okay, so it's very different from the mixing structure of the quarks. All right, so that has also triggered a lot of activity in model building, which I'm going to spare you also. All right, so these are the open questions. We don't know if this mixing angle is zero. We don't know if this other mixing angle, which seems to be maximal, is really maximal, or it's away from maximal, if it's bigger or smaller than maximal mixing. We don't know if there is CP violation. We don't know the mass ordering. And because we don't have much information on the scale, we don't know if neutrinos are hierarchical or degenerated, or we don't know if neutrinos are Dirac or Majorana particles. So in order to address the four first of these questions, at least at the first stage, we are building now new generation of experiments, long baseline and reactor experiments, aimed at answering at least partially some of the questions, which are supposed to come out online. And don't blame me if they are late, because this is their claimed commissioning and data taking starting date, to give us some at least partial answers on these questions. And then depending on the answers for this question, we will go for new facilities, and I'm not going to explain you either in terms of forms of a beta beam or a neutrino factory. All right, so the next 2 minutes, just what we know about the neutrino mass scale. Well, we know upper bounds only, and we have the lower bounds because at least one has to be heavier than 5×10⁻¹. Okay, so this is the electron ball. So this is the bound that we have from tritium beta decay, and it has been with us for quite a while. But there is an experiment that is being built and is supposed to start taking data next year, or maybe 1 year after, which is supposed to improve the sensitivity to 0.3. So it doesn't guarantee, doesn't have a single guarantee from what we know of oscillations, but it may get lucky. Then if neutrinos are Majorana, we have neutrino left double beta decay, which give us, if we observe a signal, the most important answer at the moment for many theories, which is whether neutrinos are Dirac or Majorana particles. If Majorana masses are the only source of lepton number violation, then it also gives us some information on the masses, but only under this condition. And the name of the game is, of course, that in order to relate the lifetime of this decay with the Majorana mass, you need to know the matrix elements, of nuclear matrix elements, which are very uncertain. So there is this is the present bound at the moment of the order of electron volt from Heidelberg-Moscow and for the germanium, and there are some proposed experiments to observe to go down by 2 orders of magnitude on this. And before moving forward, let me just tell you that there is some, there was, you probably have heard, some part of the Heidelberg-Moscow collaboration, some very small part of the Heidelberg-Moscow collaboration, who claimed to observe a signal, not a limit, with some observed evidence, okay? So in any case, the evolution in this direction is that some of the prototype, one prototype in particular of these future experiments, puts bounds on the lifetime of a different isotope, but within the same model of nuclear matrix elements, this bound can result already in ruling out part of this evidence. So this is some development in this area. And then, of course, we have limits on the neutrino scale from cosmology we heard yesterday. I have nothing to add other than, okay, what we heard. All right, so let me now spend the last 5 minutes to tell you about, or 5 or 7 minutes, to tell you a little bit about what we can learn besides neutrino masses and mixings from the data. So one thing we can do is we can go back to solar neutrinos and try to learn what they were made for, which is try to learn about the sun. And what do we know about the sun? We know the sun shines by converting protons into alpha particles, into helium. And it does do this through two main reaction chains, which is the proton-proton and the CNO cycle. And the first proposal, indeed, is that the main source of energy was the CNO cycle. But now, with more precise determination of the nuclear reactions, we know that from the standard model of the Sun, the prediction is that most of the energy comes from proton-proton chain, PP chain. So we can ask a very modest question. I mean, can we actually test this experimentally? In principle, yes, because neutrinos, if you can measure the spectrum of neutrinos, neutrinos carry information from the reaction, so you can actually trace back how much of each reaction happened, and that will tell you how much energy was produced in each of them. The truth of the matter is that this is difficult first, because experimentally the data is not so precise, and second, because till recently we have this problem that we have all these possible scenarios of oscillations, some of which basically imply that no matter how many CNO neutrinos you produce, you will never detect them in the Earth, because they would all have oscillated away. So till 2002, there was no limit. But then with the best solar data and with the Kamblan determination of the oscillation parameters, that possibility was ruled out. And at the moment, including the best, and this is there is an impact on the latest Borexino data on this, we can experimentally, from neutrino, exclusively tell that at most 6% of the energy of the Sun comes from the CNO cycle, which is a test of consistency of the model, at least. All right, so what else can I tell you? What else can we learn? All right, the second observation I want to make is that you usually hear that oscillations mean that neutrinos have masses and mixings, and that's not correct. Mass and mixings means that neutrinos oscillate. The other way around is not correct in general. In general, because what you need to have oscillations is, as I say, a misalignment between the interaction and the propagation states, and there are many physics effects that will give you that. This is a list, brief list, of alternative scenarios that were proposed sometime in the literature as an alternative to mass and mixings to oscillations. Weird as they are, I don't know, violations of Lorentz invariance, because the velocity of the neutrinos is different from C, or non-standard interactions in matter, which have historical interest, because actually matter effects in the Sun were proposed, not in the standard model, but as a consequence of these anomalies. So all these produce oscillations, and the characteristic that differentiates this from masses and mixing is that the oscillation wavelength depends on energy differently. So in general, they tend to give effects at higher energies when the mass and mixing mass oscillations have died out. So that's how we could rule them out as the main evidence, as the main mechanism. But you still can have this question of, if all these unknown effects are there, how they affect like determination of these masses and mixing that I told you. Are these results that I show you, are they robust? And if they are, okay, so what do I can say about these crazy effects people have postulated? So this is the type of effect you would expect if they were there. You would expect deviation from the non-oscillation signal at high energies. And you don't observe it, so this is just to show you that the determination of mass and mixing is pretty robust, whether you include these effects or not. And this allows you to put strong constraints, for example, on these deviations from the velocity of the asymptotic velocity of the neutrinos from C of the order of 1 in 10 to the minus 24, which is probably some of the strongest bounds in the literature. All right, the last second, I'm going to tell you something even more wild to me, which is this how unparticles can do something about solar neutrinos. And Benjamin Greenstein has left me, which is a pity, because he gave this beautiful talk yesterday. And so I'm not going to explain you this, but to a poor phenomenologist, this idea of Jojai is that there's some kind of hidden sector at high energies. I'm about to finish. There's this hidden sector that has some gauge coupling that has an infrared fixed point below which obviously presents scale invariance, and it only couples to the standard model via some exchange of some messenger field. So in the high energy in the ultraviolet regime, I have this standard effective Lagrange and non-renormalizable, and then this operator eventually maps at low energy into something that is called unparticle stuff. And because of scaling variance, that antiparticle behaves like an, actually doesn't have to be an integer, but okay, some du doesn't have to be integer number of invisible states. So why do I care about this? I care about this because if they couple to fermions and they couple to neutrinos and they do it non-universally, then I have funny effects in solar neutrinos. Neutrinos can decay. And more interesting, because of the exchange of antiparticles between the standard between the neutrinos and the other fermions, I have a long-range force. I have a long-range force which actually can be strongly constrained from a fifth forces type of analysis, but also can be constrained by the effect on the matter potential in the sun. And it's a very dramatic effect, as you can see here. And I have been very careful to only show you the results for the scalars, because my dimension has to be less than 2 to have some visible effect, which is what you need for phenomenology in general. So the basic idea is that if this is a mild non-universality, then this is basically totally ruled out to be observed at the scales have to be so high that you would never observe anything in a collider. Alternatively, if you want to see something at the collider, you must have basically Fraber effects totally out for these antiparticle couplings to the standard model. Or alternatively, you break a scale invariance at low energy, so they don't affect neutrinos, or they don't couple to neutrino at all for some reason that you don't. All right. So this is the summary. I have tried to show you the big experimental effort that has done, mainly in the last decade, to prove oscillations beyond the doubt and to give us a good determination of some of the parameters. We have a lot that we ignored, among other things, where this all comes from, okay, which I didn't even address. But despite everything we ignore, the data is good enough so that we can actually learn a little bit about other physics beyond masses and mixings, like the solar or the extensions of the minimal, what I call the next to minimal standard model of masses and mixings, but violation of fundamental symmetries, and all these things that I didn't talk about, including massing neutrinos, and also, as I tried to mention, there were constraints on antiparticles from solar physics. All right, thank you very much.
Questions?
I have a couple of questions. You had a very cryptic remark on the slide about the neutrinoless double beta decay. You said part of the Heidelberg-Moscow group is claiming a result. Could you clarify that statement?
Well, I mean, it's published in the literature. It's Klaptograus, I think is his, I'm not able to pronounce his name, who was at that time the spokesperson of the Heidelberg-Moscow and a couple of collaborators made the analysis differently from the official of the collaboration. The official of the collaboration turned out into a limit, but they claim a signal, they claim a peak, and they claim it with a certain degree of... the peak is there, nobody doubts there is a peak. The doubt is whether that peak is really a signal or is just some fluctuation from the background, and that's where the controversy came.
Okay, you're not saying that the other part of the group is denying it. That was what I was.
Well, I really have no idea what is the internal relation in that group. The man has retired, all right, so I think so I don't know.
And the other question is, how geared up is the neutrino community for the possibility of neutrinos from another supernova?
How
ready are you for the possibility
of
a
neutrino? Well, I'm not an expert. There is this supernova watch program, so everybody who has a detector that can detect neutrinos in the world are really part of that, on all possible part of the spectrum. Okay, so every of these experiments and more, I think they are really, you know, they are trying to, and they work together to try to have some avoiding the problem that happened in 1987 with the non having the real coordination between the experiments. So I think there is that effort. I don't know more details about it.
Other questions? Maybe while our next speaker is setting up, I could ask you, is the human body really a source of neutrinos?
You don't like that?
Well, what are they coming from?
from the potassium. We have potassium.
Potassium. Oh.
We have potassium in our body. Okay, and the gaze, it just, and it looks like a big number. I asked my student years ago, and I say, this looks like such a big number. And he say, Concha, Avogadro number is very large. That was his answer. So yeah, it's 700 million a day.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, second speaker this morning is Alexis Aguilar Arevalo from Triumph, and he'll tell us the results from the mini Boon experiment.
Hi. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation to speak here at Brander Institute. It's a wonderful place to be.